It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. They're not in Vegas. They're not at CES. But we will have all the CES news that relates to Microsoft. We'll also talk about voice assistants and the silencing of Cortana, plus two, not one, but two new versions of Windows 10 hitting your hard drives this week. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 603, recorded Wednesday, January 9th, 2019. A low-volume jig. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software powers the full spectrum of collaboration between IT teams and the rest of your organization. Visit Atlassian.com to find out which Atlassian tools are right for your team and give their products a try for free. And by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today. For an extra 3 months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the not at CES version. Paul Thurrott is here from Thurrott.com.
Delightfully.
Delightfully.
Not at CES.
Delightfully not at CES. Mary Jo Foley is also here. They are both in their respective domiciles. Mm-hmm. I want to point out hundreds of miles away from one another, and yet through the magic of Skype, that ever so magical device, we are together.
Yeah,
and not
Bill Gates'
in
magic
Vegas.
Of software.
Yes. Hello.
Yeah. Anything that prevents us from going to Vegas is a good thing.
Anything.
Common sense.
Anything.
Yep.
And this year especially. See, I mean, every year we kind of say this, but it's gotten.
It's yeah. just nonsense.
It's just there's nothing.
So no. From our perspective, there's a bunch of PCs that are announced every year. Yeah. It's just one of the two times per year where basically every PC maker announces a bunch of stuff. But PCs, I don't know if you noticed, they're not exactly a new thing. They're not changing a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, well, they're great now with three lenses or anything.
And right.
AMD, I guess AMD Chromebooks is a story, sort of.
Yeah, sort of.
If you're a manufacturer or any company and you want to get the word out, it seems to me CES is not the best place to do that anyway.
I actually agree with that. And although the world changes, right? So Apple obviously infamously has put up a big advertisement on a hotel in Vegas.
Yeah, that was the whole story. That was literally the biggest story of CES.
Actually, I don't think it was. I would say the biggest story of CES is that Apple is putting AirPlay and iTunes on smart TVs from a variety of manufacturers, right? So Apple, the company that supposedly never goes to CES, actually has a pretty big CES presence this year.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's what happens when things go south, you know?
Change. Yeah, I know. I have this terrible FOMO cycle that I go through, fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. We're around December time, and I do this to poor Lisa every time. Maybe we should go to CES.
And she, well, actually,
it's good that happens
in December because that makes it hard.
No, you know, I checked and Trump International Hotel has plenty of rooms.
Jeez.
Plenty
what
of rooms.
What price your soul? Like, what do you have to like get? Like they cut your finger on the way in so you can.
Omerta. No, yeah. There are hotel rooms. They really jack them up. I looked at the Cosmopolitan and it goes from $188. No. $119 on Sunday night, this past Sunday. To over $1,000 last night.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yeah, same room.
Yeah. So just go next week, Leo. You'll have a great time.
I am, actually. We're going to see Lady Gaga in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, perfect.
Oh, you are? Well.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're staying down on the Strip, a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
And Gaga, well, who doesn't love Lady Gaga? So it's going to be interesting because we're seeing Elton John next week.
Oh, cool. Right.
Yeah, his very farewell cool. tour. And Lady Gaga is in residency, I guess they call it. Kind of like a major university.
a little bit. Very Can much, you audit this class?
Yeah, very much that like that, where they bring in, you know, Nobel Prize winning singer, songwriter. And then, you know, she lives there for a while so the students can benefit from her wisdom. And
sure.
So we're looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, despite the FOMO, Lisa managed to talk me down, And now I'm looking at it and going, wow, I'm glad. I guess I'm glad. Because what you forget, it's like having a baby, I hear, not having done this. But what you forget is the pain.
Preach.
You forget the pain of CES. The cab That's lines right. that go on for hours.
And then you're the sick every time slow. Afterwards.
The illness Everybody gets that sick. Follows. And, you know, they've
I
got
guess,
booths.
There are people I miss seeing.
Yeah, no. That's the one I like.
And then we have some private meetings, especially with PC makers, that are useful.
Yeah.
So they're not essential, but not essential.
But so you skipped out of it? Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't gone in like 10 years.
Really?
I haven't been in ages. Yeah.
I haven't been in ages either. I can't remember the last time. We used to spend a lot of money, have a booth. And that really was fun.
Yep.
Yeah.
I remember doing a segment with you over in
South Hall.
This would be South Hall.
Next to the Earthquake Subwoofer Company.
Yeah, that's right.
We're here at CES. Cool, but yeah, it was cool, but it didn't, you know, and it seemed like there was more there then than there is now. I mean, really, honestly, I'm reading the stories thinking, come on, there's something, right?
It's a bunch of stories about people who are trying to justify them being there and by writing about nonsense, you know, that. Yeah. And obviously, there's going to be a handful of things that are, you know, are truly interesting for sure. But
so what is I actually don't want to jump the gun. Your CES story is a little bit.
There's not much to say about CES.
A little lower.
It's okay.
Did Microsoft, they're not at CES, right?
They're there.
Yeah, they don't have a booth, an official presence.
Everybody's there like they have a suite and you can go meet with them and stuff like that.
They're Microsoft there, like, to has always had a press room. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I assume they have the same, right? So there's the secondary hotel, which is, I think, is the Aladdin. Does that sound right? Sands? I don't know. Whatever.
Rub it and see what happens.
Down in the basement of that building, they've always had a press room down there. So I didn't go this year, but I assume if you go down to the basement, there they are. And the giant gentleman with the suit on will not let you through unless you're in the press. Right. So he looks pretty serious. In fact, he looks like he might have mob connections. But yeah, that's how it works. They don't have a booth.
Huh. Yeah. And not much to say, I guess, right?
It's more a show for their partners, really. Like they're there to say, hey, we're there in support of Windows 10. I guess that Phil Spencer was on the stage for the AMD keynote saying, hey, Xbox has AMD inside. Yep.
Right.
Huh. That kind of stuff.
And maybe the next Xbox will have 7-nanometer AMD inside. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? I'm sure somebody knows.
Somebody knows.
I mean, I didn't say today is the point. So I don't know. You know, obviously, if Microsoft had a bigger consumer push, you would be seeing announcements like we see for Cortana, Google Assistant and Alexa.
That's really the only people who go there for now, Cortana. Right? Is Echo's stuff and Google's Assistant stuff. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of little case manufacturers, auto accessory guys, stereo guys.
It is TVs. Kind of an auto show, though.
It's TVs and audio, autos, really.
Right.
Of course, you know, LG got cracks me up because it got pressed for the same thing they showed last year,
right?
The roll-up TV. I remember that distinctly last year.
I think that the TV thing is uninteresting right now. 4K, TVs have become really inexpensive, and I think that upgrade cycle has pretty much happened. And TVs, to get people to upgrade again, A, several years are going to have to go by. And B, the technology is really going to have to show up. And the QLED, 8K, whatever. But there's no content that can take advantage of this stuff. There's no bandwidth that would let us stream content of that quality. I think the 4K thing was such a huge improvement, especially when you factor like HDR and some of the Psy technologies, that it's just...
There's not much to say. That's
kind of done.
Yeah. Well, that's the industry as a whole. Okay.
Yep.
We're done.
We did everything.
Well, no, it never does that. But I mean, there will eventually be a new TV format that will be the next thing. And we can talk about TVs again. But I right now it's like, whatever. I mean,
but that's true for PCs. That's true for phones.
Yeah.
Yep. The coolest thing I saw, I think it was a Verge story I saw this in, was a desk with a PC built into the desk for space constrained areas. So you could like pull the monitor out from the wall and adjust it to different heights, but all the computing power was in your desk. I'm like, okay, that's useful for somebody like me, but otherwise
Yeah, but then you're buying, you don't.
Then you have to change your desk.
You're buying a desk.
I know. I need a new desk too. So okay. Maybe that's why it was interesting.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about a little place called IKEA.
But think of having it in your desk. So then, you know, your PC's not taking up any footprint on your desk. Because it's like,
well, in a way, you know, I mean, if you're going to talk about a long-term trend, it's computing everywhere, right? So,
right. Yeah.
My PC is built into my monitor, so it's actually not taking up any space on my desk. But
your monitor is.
I don't know if the desk is the best form factor for a computer. What are you looking down?
No, it had this thing where the monitor could be raised, pulled out,
press a button, and it emerges.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
And that's CES, ladies and gentlemen.
In a nutshell. Holy camoly.
More interested in smart toilets.
Kohler had an Alexa-powered toilet. But again, maybe I'm crazy, but I think they announced that last year.
Yeah.
This is a really interesting example of an industry that's just kind of in stasis right now, or plateau right now.
Everything is, though. You could pick any single thing you want. If you want to talk about like a smart thermostats, rather. You know, there's no giant innovation coming to these things, right? They'll have air quality controls and, you know, stuff like that. But I mean, it's just there is no major new anything really when it comes to CES. There's just nothing. For example, if Kindle switched over overnight to like color e-ink, right, which would be amazing.
Yeah.
But how does that change the world? Like, does it really? I don't know. It's not that, you know, I'm not saying it's nothing, but I can't think of anything in this sphere that, unless the car is going to get off the ground and fly, you know, that would be interesting. I was promised that as a child. When's that going to happen?
Yeah. I mean, I even remember CESs where there were more exciting things like flying. I guess there's a flying car at CES this year too, but okay. From the same people, the same people who do. Ostrich? No, it's not that. It's not an ostrich. the horizontal takeoff.
Leo, use your words.
I can't. The words have left me.
His gestures are good, though. I'm like, yeah. I know what you mean.
That's too bad. People are only listening. The thing with the horizontal vertical VTOF Osprey. It's like an ostrich. Only it flies.
It's like an ostrich, except there's really nothing like an ostrich.
It flies.
Osprey, anyway. Osprey.
I don't think ostriches fly, by the way.
No, they don't. That's the Osprey does, though, because it's a VTOL. Anyway, it's not important.
I feel like in the past, CES used to be more a visionary show. You know, like the keynotes were more visionary kinds of things than they are now. Now it's kind of like, here's what we have. You know, in TVs, here's what we have coming.
That's what I miss. I mean, it makes sense that Microsoft is not part of CES anymore, frankly. And yes, we write about Microsoft. But I think for us in particular, and people who like Microsoft, care about Microsoft, it was a chance for Bill Gates in particular, and later Steve Ballmer, but I like the Bill Gates stuff especially, where they would talk about the future, right?
Yeah.
This isn't stuff that's going to come out this year, but here's a bunch of stuff we're working on, you know?
Yeah.
And I used to enjoy it for that aspect of it alone, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
It was kind of a neat into where their head was.
You were participating in the future.
You did. Yeah. Like you're getting an inside track on here's what's really going to happen.
CES is aggressively today. It's aggressively today.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
And it's aggressively, it's about things. It's just about things.
It's things.
And sometimes things that never show up at all, right? Like just, this is what we're thinking about. No.
Yeah. And those articles about the things that don't exist and how much better they are than the things we have here today.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite articles, you know. Like this thing, like someone heard a rumor that Samsung was going to have a pinhole something in a phone. So some other idiot drew a picture of it. And oh my God, this looks way better than the existing Samsung phones. Yes. Well, of course it does. It's a fantasy.
Yeah. They don't have to make it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is what we've turned into.
I think CES, wasn't CES the first time Microsoft showed off the vision for the big ass table thing? The thing that was originally the Surface.
Table. Yeah.
Right. I don't remember.
I think it was. I think it was there where they showed like Bill Gates putting demo. his he like put his keys down on something and it recognized.
Yeah, yeah,
it
remember was, that? Yeah.
Yeah.
We just did this somewhere. We used a. Oh, in the in Berlin, there's an East German museum that uses a surface table so you can interact with artifacts from an East German house from the 70s. So when you put down particular objects on the table, it does exactly what you're describing. The screen changes and it, you know, gives you information about that thing. Mm-hmm. It's cool. And then your head kind of races like, what could this be used for? And then eventually what you realize is it's basically going to be used by hotels in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, and then the odd museum.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's the folks who do the Osprey are Bell, the helicopter people, and they have a concept hybrid electric air taxi. They hope to start testing in early 2020. Again.
I don't think I want to be one of the first testers.
Testing. Yeah. How about a smart bot for boxing training? How about the Hyundai Elevate? It walks, it climbs, it assaults Echo Base and takes out the shield generators. I lost my head.
Talk about a niche market. What are you talking about?
I'm just looking at the different coverage. This is CNET's coverage of and it's incredible.
It's terrible.
Nreal light mixed reality glasses that they hope
this
year.
This is terrible because this is our jobs. But let me just reduce technology to exactly what it is. We got a sous vide for Christmas, right? Yeah. And it's an interesting device. My wife is an incredible cook, and I got to be honest, she doesn't need this. She makes steak or duck breast or whatever; it's perfect. But you know, we've been experimenting with it, and it's fine. You know, but one of the things, like, I cook eggs every day.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm going to use this thing. Let me see what this is like. Because you can cook an egg to exactly whatever you want it.
You can.
And it takes 45 minutes.
Put the egg in the night before. Yeah.
It's 45 minutes is what it takes.
Yeah.
So
see you at work, egg.
Let me tell you something that I've mastered. The ability to make the perfect poached egg in, five minutes. Yeah. Exactly 5 minutes. Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, when you want to eat an egg, what you don't want to do is wait 45 minutes.
Yeah, I know. So what you really need is the sous vide that I have, the mellow sous vide. You put the egg in the night before, and you tell it when you want to eat.
To time it, and
Chills the egg, because it does. Yeah. It's an unusual sous vide. It's both chills and heats. Chills the egg until 45 minutes before you get up, cooks the egg, and then when you wake up.
And then chills it again.
No, it doesn't.
Because don't you want to, it doesn't matter.
No. Anyway. Unlike boiling it, you can leave it in the sous vide for a while.
That's right, because
only 120 degrees or something. It's really just hot, warm water.
Look, all I'm saying is five minutes.
I'm with you.
And it's perfect.
I'm with you.
That's all I'm saying.
It's the best soft-boiled egg I ever had, by the way.
All right.
Sure.
It was pooped out of the butt of a golden goose, and then it went into some magical machine that you're describing.
Hey, yay. Anyway. Were there any computers that you thought were interesting?
There were a ton of computers. Were any of them interesting? Not exactly.
No.
Right?
Only one.
Oh.
What about the Surface Studio clone from Lenovo?
Oh, interesting. Is it a lot less expensive than my $3,000 Surface Studio?
No, it's a bit less expensive. That's the problem. So if this thing had been $1,500, I think I mean, excitement is a bit of a strong word, but it's like $2,400.
I know. But you know why it's interesting? Because Microsoft, I think, wants their OEMs to clone the Surface Studio. And so far, Dell is the only one who has. And I think they only did it as a monitor and not a full PC.
It wasn't actually the same at all. They last year at CES, they had a device that laid flat on the table you could draw on and everything. And it was interesting in its own right. But you're right. It was not a Surface Studio replacement.
So this is the first clone of the Surface Studio. Clone, using that word lightly. But the first OEM device. That was the only thing I was like, wow.
So for Microsoft, there's success with Surface in many ways could be defined by the fact that other PC makers copy their designs. And that in doing so, Microsoft has in effect created a new market, right? Yep. Now, this is never going to be a big market, but I would say, I think we could lump the Dell device into here. It was certainly inspired by Surface Studio. And now that Lenovo has outright copied it, and I think this will because, it, you know, as it turns out, like I'm using an all-in-one computer right now that doesn't have touch. The iMac is a popular all-in-one computer that doesn't have multi-touch. But these devices are unique because you can, you know, bring them forward and write on them and or touch them if you want to. And there is a market for that kind of device. It's not, you know, it's not a huge market, but it's I would consider that a success for Microsoft for sure.
Yeah. Otherwise, though, like you were saying, iterative devices, like, you know, has a new chip or it has like rounded corners. It used to have square corners.
The next version of the ThinkPad X1, whatever. The next version of the XPS 13.
Yeah, because you knew that there was going to be a new X1 Carbon, and this now it's here.
There always is.
There always is, every year.
And there, the one that was out last year wasn't round or oval. It was still the same shape. Yeah. It wasn't orange or pink. It was still black. It's not, you know, this, we're not doing major things. It's that, which is fine. I will say this isn't necessarily CES, like new to CES news, but Intel did do a demonstration of the 10 nanometer. I think it's called Ice Lake chipset, right? Well, which will appear in PCs.
Yeah, I mean, this is long awaited, so that's good.
Yeah, this is actually going to be a big deal, but it's not going to impact the PC world fully until probably a year from now, frankly, because the first PCs will come out in time for the holidays this year. It's not clear if that means desktop only or laptop only. You know, we don't know yet. But you know how these rollouts always, you know, happen over a period of time. And so IFA probably will see some announcements in the fall. Later, we'll see releases. At CES next year, we'll see some announcements. And then in the spring next year, there'll be more. It might be 15 or 18 months, really. But this generation is finally happening. And I do think it's going to be a big deal. It doesn't help anyone listening to this right now. You know, it's not going to change the story in the next 6 to 9 months, for sure.
Intel have a booth there? I guess they always still have a booth there, don't they?
I wasn't there this year, but they always have.
Yeah, so. They've always had that big booth. It used to be kind of across from the Microsoft booth. Now it's across from the TCL.
I think it engulfed the Microsoft booth space.
The only reason I remember it is because it was a catty corner booth, and it had the really soft carpet. So as you whizzed by it on the way to the exit,
trip.
You know, it would be just like a moment of and then on. Yeah.
That would always make me stumble a little bit because I'm trying to cruise between people and you hit the plush carpet and it's like quicksand, you know,
it's true. You like sink right in. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Okay. So Project Athena.
Yeah. That also was kind of interesting. That's the name for what Intel is trying to do against Qualcomm. Basically it's the successor to Ultrabooks and how they're trying to make PCs more responsive, better battery life, all those things that Qualcomm's doing as well.
Good.
It's good to hear that they care, you know.
It's but 5G connectivity is part of it. And therefore it's in many ways an extension of Microsoft's Always Connected PC initiative.
It is. Yep.
Which Intel has an initiative with exactly the same name, by the way.
Right.
Microsoft is a member of this little consortium of companies, by the way, which makes it interesting because that means that future Surface PCs will have 5G chips in them and will be always connected PCs.
Mm-hmm. Which would be good.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I'm still thinking about Intel's carpet.
not about poached eggs.
Oh, that too. I am now glad that I didn't go to CES because we've just received 3 giant boxes of meat foyer there. I stepped out for a second because my son texted me and said, "You just got a lot of meat."
Okay.
I thought he was joking.
My reply to that would have been, "Thanks, buddy."
Go to it's not on our Instagram yet, but I did pose with the meat for a picture. Our Instagram is twit.tv. Twit.tv. If you want to see a picture of me and three large cases of meat, I think it's a new sponsor. Actually, man, I love it when we have a sponsor.
You don't just randomly get giant cases of meat.
No. I think this is good. It's nice to have a meat sponsor. Every podcast.
Hey, what about a vegetable sponsor?
Oh yeah. Hey,
put down Pear Girl. You get your thing.
No, that's good. If the Broccoli Association of America would like to, or you know, to go with the meat, maybe the Potato Growers Council.
This is what happens when everyone's a winner, Leo. Don't put up with this.
Everyone
this is
terrorism.
No, we can have Tot Pick of the Week.
Tot of the Week.
guys, there are possibilities.
You know, it kills me. We had a beer sponsor, and they wouldn't advertise on Windows Weekly. I said, but all the beer drinkers listen to Windows Weekly.
Are you kidding?
It's good beer.
Because I don't drink beer. Was that why?
No, I don't know what it is. I don't get it. It's very odd. Okay.
He's a wine drinker, I can tell.
Yeah, it looks like he's probably likes rosé slushies or something. Anything else?
Watch that episode.
The rosé slushie.
Did you say rosé slushies?
Oh, man. We'll find out about that this summer. Anything else? I'm going to look at this Surface Studio clone, because you know I use the Surface Studio very happily. I really like it. It does it for me.
I mean, that's most of it. I mean, I honestly, as just a normal consumer, I think the bigger story out of CES was the assistant stuff and all of the support that you're getting from third parties. And actually, that's part of my tip, so maybe I should say that for later. But I think that was bigger than the PC stuff, just because it impacts so many more people. Yeah. And is a little, well, no, it's just as iterative, actually. But it's a newer thing. So this still got a little bit of a shine on it.
The Apple iPhone ad, you know, what happens in your iPhone stays in your iPhone, actually made me think of what you had said a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, about Microsoft and the opportunity they have to double down on privacy.
Right.
That should be a Microsoft ad, too. You know, what happens on Windows stays in Windows.
Well, first they're going to make that true.
Well, so, but that's exactly what they
mean. But I agree with you. And I don't remember what made me think of this, but I was looking at some Microsoft announcement about AI, and I thought to myself, you know what? People actually don't trust AI. I think for most normal people, what they think of is Skynet and the Terminator movies and how the robots are going to decide that humans are the weak link and they're going to kill us all. And that maybe the last thing we need is, it's not, they're a simpleton kind of things. I mean, like what I said was genius, but, you know, like worries about, you know, robots stealing jobs or AI taking away jobs and that kind of thing.
Well, that's going to happen. I'm sorry.
It's already happened.
Sure. Yeah.
But I think there's a broader concern that is ethical in nature.
Yeah. And that's
about
legit.
AI.
Yeah. That's legit.
And it is legit. And Microsoft, I mean, to their credit, they often speak of ethical AI. And they have put forward various ideas about maybe formalizing what ethical AI means, somewhere, you know, sort of like the Asimov, you know, what is it, 5 laws of robotics or whatever, except an actual law in real life or something. And okay, that's fine. But I think the broader thing that is maybe more important and could take AI under its umbrella is this privacy stuff, you know? And my recommendation to Microsoft, which I wrote up, is just that they should focus on marketing privacy instead of AI, even though they will still put AI in everything, you know. It's not that I'm suspicious of AI personally. I'm actually not really that suspicious. But when you see how Microsoft is contorting itself to make everything look like AI, and you can tell by the way that they release information about new products and services, how they always emphasize AI, that this is an edict from on high. It's gotten to the point where they're like, well, you know, Microsoft has been an AI pioneer since they added spell checking to Microsoft Word in 1988 or whatever. It's like, guys, hold on a second. That is not anything. That has nothing to do with AI. Nothing.
No. And then it's like the boy who cried wolf, right? Like the more they do it, the more your eyes just glaze over when it is a real AI thing. Like it's like, oh yeah, more AI. Yeah.
But privacy is something I think most people get and care about. Not Mary Jo, as I found out earlier today. But I think there's an opportunity there to do what Apple has done and is doing around privacy. And for Microsoft, I think it's a great selling point. They could do something specific, like say, look, in Europe we have this GDPR thing, and it's a lot of people have companies have complained about how hard it is to adhere to these rules and all of the nuances of it and where does it end and blah, blah, blah. Microsoft could just say, look, we're not going to just meet the needs of this thing. We're going to exceed them and we're going to do it everywhere, not just in Europe. You know,
well, I don't know. Did you see Brad Smith's top 10 list that he put out at the start of 2019, Paul? Brad Smith, the head of Microsoft General Counsel.
I actually don't think I did.
Okay. Number one, privacy.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think you're going to get your wish in part. I think they're really going to push more on privacy, and GDPR is kind of their lead off as to how they're going to do that. But he, in his list, he kind of conflates privacy and AI in part. He's like, you know, it would be good to do more like privacy related innovation, like what we're doing with AI. And I'm like, oh, there's AI again, right? But still, I think you're going to hear from them more about privacy this year. Even, you know, last year we heard a lot because of GDPR, but this year I think you're going to keep hearing more from them.
Well, I mean, the Facebook stuff has kind of brought it to the public forefront, right? I do think it is an issue a lot of people think about all of a sudden. You know, we were joking earlier, Mary Jo and I, about Scott McNeely, but he had said back in, I think, the late 90s, he said, look, your privacy is over. You got to get over this. Yeah. It ended. And that was 20 years ago-ish.
Yeah.
That was nothing compared to now, right?
I know. Wasn't.
So according to Adweek, Microsoft has decided to create trust and empathy through its icons.
Oh God!
So you could do it with privacy.
I know, but do those icons have a privacy policy, Leo? Because if they don't, that's baloney.
Microsoft reboots its look to better connect with consumers, aiming to create trust and empathy through design.
Privacy policy.
What about that?
No, but I think that's some, these things all coexist, right? In other words, you're trying to create a relationship with your customers that is based on trust. And there are all kinds of different ways to do that. One of them is you could stop screwing up Windows updates, by the way. But, you know, the privacy stuff is important. I think that's part of it. Making your products more humanistic or whatever by making the icons prettier is a small part of it, but it is still part of it. I just think it's something, it would play to its strengths, but there are specific steps it would have to make with specific products. And I normally, you know, just because we care about Windows the most pretty much, and we talk about this stuff a lot, I mean, there's a lot of privacy nonsense in Windows, frankly, still. Yeah. And there's a lot of complicated controls. They're all over the place in settings. They're not all in one place, even though there is a place in there called privacy. And this is something they could really clean up and finally give users the ability to just turn off the data collection, you know?
Yeah.
Just respect that need of... then this privacy thing I'm saying can never happen, because you can't talk about privacy and not provide it.
I know. I agree with you on that, but I think a part of privacy is privacy theater, right? It's making people feel like they're doing everything they can about privacy. But then when you talk to them about, well, how about turning off telemetry or letting people who understand it to turn it off, that they never will, especially for home users. Yeah. They never will do that, right?
Well, so sadly, I actually kind of agree with you, but I still think that for that, I'm not saying turn it off. I'm saying let people turn it off. You know, in other words, there are different degrees to which data can be sent to Microsoft from a Windows 10 PC. And I have no problem with the data that's being sent to Microsoft, assuming that my understanding of what is being sent is correct. Right. In that I feel that as a part of this community of Windows users, I can help everyone's experience be better by providing them with data that they can use to fix problems. Right. It's something we should all take part in my opinion. However, I also respect the fact that some people are more privacy centric, you know, sensitive or whatever. And I just, as a person, I guess I just agree that they should be able to turn that off if they don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, Microsoft can make it difficult, but they should make it possible. And right now it's not possible.
Yeah. Oh, well, I guess we won't see a giant billboard next year at CES on the Marriott.
For Microsoft. Actually,
You
still might. I mean, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's nonsense that what's on your iPhone stays on your iPhone. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Everybody was quick to point that out.
Right.
All you have to do is install an app. Your data is all over the place.
It's over. Yeah. As long as you don't open the box, you're cool.
Yeah, you bought this $1,000 phone not to use any of those apps.
Yeah.
It's not staying on the phone.
Yeah. Or don't use iCloud.
Right.
The difference between, you know, honestly, what Apple is selling, essentially, they'll never be able to sell it this way because it kind of diminishes the message, is we are protecting you from us. We can't help you with anything else, right? Because as soon as you install anything on there, it goes whatever. you know, Samsung or any of the other Android makers are like, yeah, we're not even protecting you from us, you know. Yeah. But the degree to which you're exposed to your data is exposed to the outside world on any of those phones is roughly the same. You know, like I trust Apple, honestly. I mean, for this kind of, for data and whatever. So the notion that they're not even collecting my data doesn't help me in the slightest. I never thought they would ever do anything nefarious with it to begin with. What they should be protecting me against is all that other stuff. Yeah. And I know they do to some small degree here and there. But the fact is, if you want to use the Facebook app or you want to use Twitter or you want to use an email app or whatever it is, like, I'm sorry, but they all have different terms and all of them include using your data. Pretty much.
Yeah. And so Scott McNeely was right.
Yeah. I've come to understand that he was right about a lot, actually. Yeah. Right?
He was just crazy, but he was right.
He was a nut, but he was kind of a lovable nut. And he was so anti-Microsoft at a time when, frankly, he was a little ahead of the curve, right? Because remember, they were eventually sued, you know, by the U.S. government and then by the EU as well for all of the things he was complaining about.
Mm-hmm. We had Scott on Triangulation a couple of years ago.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Does he still have all his teeth? Because right? I know he plays hockey.
No, he's not mellowed at all.
He hasn't? Really? I thought he was nice. Kind of like a little kinder, gentler
Scott.
Oh,
yeah. McNeely. I mean, I don't remember how. I mean, he's still Scott McNeely, though. He's pretty outrageous. Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
That's yeah. Cool. What did you talk?
I don't remember. You know, I'm going to have to go back and look at it. Yeah, because he's pretty much retired. He must have known had something he was investing in, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I mean, he's, you know, as a going concern.
Yeah.
Sun was long gone.
Done.
And
Sun is done. Owned by Oracle now. That's who I'd love to interview is Larry Ellison. He's smart, though. He keeps his head down, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah.
It's really smart. I look at people like Jeff Bezos, although he is in the society pages today, but I look at him in general and say, you know, this is the way to do it. Don't be an Elon.
Yep.
You know? Right. Right. No, yeah, you got to hide the crazy.
Nothing good. Yeah. No one would know Elon was crazy if it weren't for Twitter.
Just put down the freaking mic.
Yeah.
Like, stop being such an idiot.
Stop being cuckoo.
Exactly.
Yep. Did you want to talk, Paul, about your contest? I see that's on here. So what's
yeah,
oh, wait, my contest. Can we do one more? Wait, one yes. more privacy thing, guys.
One more privacy
this
thing.
This is huge.
Oh,
right.
Huge.
Huge. Okay. Did you guys see the story I had about Bali, Microsoft Bali?
Yes. Oh, I was going to ask you about this. This is fascinating. Yeah. Okay. So this is Microsoft saying you own your data.
I know. Huh. Which is, everybody's trying to figure out, okay,
what does that
why
mean?
Are they doing this, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a Microsoft research project codenamed Bali, B-A-L-I. And a Twitter user named Longhorn found it. And then the walking cat made me see it. And I found the website, which has now been taken offline. But So Bali is Microsoft testing a way to give users control of data collected about them. And they're calling it a data bank, a personal data bank. And the bank will let users store all data, raw and inferred, generated by them so that they can visualize, manage, control, share, and monetize, which is the unusual word here, all that data. So this is in private testing inside Microsoft right now. And obviously they aren't talking about it, but it kind of builds on this concept they were testing out in Microsoft research called inverse privacy, which means inverse privacy says there's all this data that is yours that is held by other entities like grocery chains and even like toll road operators and all these other entities. They have this data and you don't have it. They have data about you. So the question is, how could you get control back of that data and somehow do something with it? You could destroy it if you wanted, or monetize it, or do something else with it. Just keep it.
Monetize it.
I know the monetize it part is saying to me, like, how would you monetize that kind of data? But maybe you would sell it back to the vendor if they wanted it or needed it. But yeah, this is a very interesting project. And, you know, because it's a research project, we don't know if it'll ever become a commercial product or a service. But these days, almost everything for Microsoft Research does become a product or part of a product. So I think this is going to be something, but exactly what and when and kind of what form it will take and why Microsoft's doing it, it's those are all questions we don't know and they're not talking about.
I think this is great. I'm glad to hear. This is not something new. I think Tim Berners-Lee had announced a couple of months ago that he was going to do something similar along those lines.
For the web,
Yeah, people want, you know, this notion, we've had people come on and recommend it, privacy advocates and so forth, that you should be able to sell your data. Instead of just giving it away kind of unwittingly, you should know what it is, what you're giving away and be able to... say,
like a personal data market.
Yeah, this is what I want for it. You know, this is what it's. It's exactly.
We wish we would have done
like
that
Microsoft
now.
To do that. I think somebody big.
Yeah. I mean, every time you know you use a free Google service, you kind of have this understanding you're using some of your data.
It's not explicit, but you're right. I mean,
yeah,
it would be nice. Yeah. If we're like here,
like a lump sum.
This is no. Yeah. I don't expect that at all. Although, you know, the notion that maybe Facebook could pay you, $15 a year is what you're worth. Mm-hmm. Or maybe if you paid them $15, they wouldn't do any marketing of your data, that kind of thing. But the notion is that, well, okay, I go to Gmail and Google says, look, here's what we're going to use this for. Here's what we're going to collect. And this is what you get. Is this worth it? Yes or no? You know, if so, sign up for Gmail. If not, see ya. But that's not explicit. It's implicit. And I think a lot of people don't really even know that that's what's going on.
This is the new version of the end user license agreement that no one reads. Remember the outrage like when iTunes came out and it was like the 17-page document that you had to just click accept to and how quaint that is today and how I wish that's all it was.
Those were the days.
You know, like, oh my God, what if Apple finds out what songs I listen to? They're going to think I'm an 80s guy. You know, what a problem to have. Maybe I'll get a good playlist out of them.
Well, or at least a jacket with some nice shoulder pads.
A puffy shirt.
Puffy shirt. So, contest. Tell us what the status is. This is something Chris Cappicella laid on us last year.
Yeah, so when Chris was on, right before Christmas, I guess it was. Christmas, as we call it. Chris Capmas, as we call it. He offered to give, through whatever means we could come up with, Windows Weekly viewers and listeners some prizes in the form of Surface hardware and product codes for Xbox Game Pass and for Office 365 Home. So since then, they were able to deliver the digital things to me over email, right? So I got that stuff immediately. And over throughout.com, we gave that stuff away over two different times. And so the one was last week, and I think the other one was, it might have been before Christmas, actually. I guess it was right before Christmas. In the sense that, you know, no good deed goes unpunished, you will not be surprised to discover that I got a couple of complaints from people who were like, I don't watch the show until 3 weeks later, and I didn't learn about this contest until it was too late to blah, 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 whatever. And I can't cure everyone's problem, but this one will get a few more complaints because the hardware arrived yesterday, so I have like this mountain of Microsoft hardware, and I will be doing a giveaway, the final giveaway from this event, over the next couple of days. So I want to just describe here how it's going to work. And if you listen to the show next week, I'm sorry, it's, you know, it's over. I can't really help. The other bad news is that because it's hardware and it's physical in nature and I have to ship it myself, I can't do this outside of the United States. It's too complicated and expensive, time consuming actually as well. So this is going to be for US and Canada only. I'm sorry. We looked into this, and I know there are people out there who are like, I would pay for that. And I, you know, thank you. I get it. You have to understand, I'm actually paying for this out of pocket. It's a little more complicated.
Just thank GDPR, friends.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. I wish that's all. It's always been difficult. I've done my own giveaways or I've sold my own devices and things. Yeah, yeah. When it goes to Europe, it's a nightmare. It's just, or wherever. It's usually Europe, but when it leaves the United States, it's really hard. I'm sorry. So just to recap what we have, we've got five Surface headphones, which I think hopefully you can see without a click. Ironically, none of the hardware we got I've ever been given for review. So it's in my house and I can't have it. And
that's very honorable of you. I would have said we have four Surface headphones to give away.
Surface Go and the type cover. So these will go together. Alcantara type cover. So the good news about the Surface Go, by the way, is I was kind of wondering about this because there are different versions of it. Obviously, this computer is on the underpowered side, but this is the best Surface Go you can get. So it's 8 gigs of RAM and 120 gigs of storage, and that means it's SSD storage. So actually, there'll be a performance boost there as well. Somewhat surprisingly, though, he also provided us with two of these awesome, funny...
You got the sweater.
Sweaters.
Not available in stores.
Right. So there's one for me and one for Mary Jo, and I talked to her about this earlier, and we both agreed that we're going to give these away as well.
Oh, you're so generous. So
I didn't really talk to her, you, Mary Jo, sorry, about the details of this, but I will do this as part of the hardware giveaway, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
Unless you want to do it separately. I don't know if you wanted to do it differently.
No.
Yeah. So here's how this is going to work. I usually try to make sure this stuff is on the site for 24 hours so people have a chance to actually, you know, get their entry in or whatever. So I will post something tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern. That's Thursday, right? January 10th. Describing what I just said. So we're giving away five each of the Surface Go and the Surface headphones, and then one large and one extra large shirt. I'll explain what you have to do to enter. It's basically just have a comment with a specific phrase for each one of the things that you'd like to be entered for. And then 24 hours later at 1 p.m. on Friday, I will close that and then announce the winners, and I'll start the process of, you know, the mess of delivering this stuff to people. So I will finally be able to wash my hands of this.
All the rules and everything you need to know at Thurott, Thurott.com.
Right. And, you know, you were talking about Vegas, and I can't remember the way you said it, but there's this effect where you hate yourself for going there, but then the year goes by and all of a sudden you're like, I could probably do childbirth. You compared it to childbirth.
Yes. It's like Vegas is like this childbirth. It's a unique philosophy only I have.
But. This doing this hardware shipping thing is a lot like that.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
Like
fulfillment.
I'm happy to be able to give people stuff that I know they want and they're going to enjoy. The process of actually doing it for me is terrible. Yeah. So I'm eager for this to be over. But I will get it out as quickly as I can.
Eric Duckman in our chat room says, next week, can we get somebody from Microsoft? He's from Apple on because he'd like to win an iPad.
You're watching the wrong show, Eric. And no.
Nice try, though, Eric.
We'll throw that one around in the next meeting.
Kick it around.
We could give away Notepad or something.
You know? Notepad. It's all yours. Yeah. A special.
I mean,
deal.
Never say never, but
a Mary Jo Foley autographed version of Notepad.
Yeah.
Ooh. I don't know how you would do that. Send him a document with your autograph, I guess.
Someone will bring like a Kindle or a Surface device or an iPad and then ask you to sign it.
Oh,
that happened to us before.
Yeah. I know it's happened to me. And I always, it's the same reaction. It's like, are you sure? I mean,
I know.
You might someday want to sell this. I can assure you that my Sharpie signature on the back is not going to raise the value.
I have a solution for that. Instead of writing to the guy's name, you just write to eBay buyer, Paul.
Yeah.
And that really solves the whole problem.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break. And then actually, we've gone through privacy as well, haven't we? Have we done it all? Yeah. So
all right, see you next week.
No. There's this thing called Windows.
Oh, we get more.
There's a crazy little thing called Windows. We got to talk about that. Before we do that, let me talk to everybody who works in software as an engineer in a collaborative environment. I know you know the name Atlassian, but let me just remind you how great Atlassian is. It's a collaboration software company that's empowering teams, including ours, all over the world, really. You know Jira, right? I mean, that is the agile platform. There's no number two. It is the, but do you also know about Confluence and Bitbucket? We use Confluence here. We use Jira here as kind of a, what do they call that? Pegboard for all of the stuff that punchboard for all the stuff that needs to get done and who's responsible, the deadlines and all that's very handy for that. And then Confluence we use to document our processes, and I think it's really important, especially with a small team like ours, that everything is documented so that the next guy can know what you did and fix whatever's broken this time around. That kind of thing. But they have a whole lot more. Bitbucket, that's great for fixing what's broken, figuring out what's broken, for reporting. They've got all sorts of reporting stuff, Jira Ops, Ops Genie status page. Look, if you're in DevOps or Agile development, if you're in IT apps to ops to ITSM, whatever's next, Atlassian, it's not just for developers. They offer an affordable, reliable suite of tools for teams of all sizes. We love it. We are totally hooked on it. And I think you will be too. Help detect incidents better, alert response teams, coordinate response efforts to resolve issues faster, keep customers or stakeholders updated with Jira Ops, Ops Genie status page, cross-team project planning, organization, and communication, just getting the job done. We're talking Jira, we're talking Confluence, we're talking Bitbucket. Your teams can choose the tools that are right for your current framework while trusting that as you grow, they will grow with you. Atlassian is the leader when it comes to collaboration in IT. I think you are going to agree. And I tell you what, like all of Atlassian's products, the tools for your IT team will be easy to learn and free to try. Very important if you go to Atlassian.com. A-T-L-A-S-S-I-A-N, Atlassian.com. Find out which Atlassian offering is right for your team. Well, I think we use them all. I think we actually have them all in our stable. Try Atlassian today and unleash your IT team's potential. Atlassian.com. I'm thrilled to have them on Windows Weekly because I know so many of you are familiar with them and use them and love them. I know we do. Now, let's talk Windows 10 with Paul and Mary Jo. What's the latest? Nothing.
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Oh, really? Since the last show, there have been two new builds of Windows 10 for the fast ring for the next version. Holy right. Cow. So we'll get to those in 1 second.
This is 19H1. This is moving along.
Yeah. Yep. Actually, one came out today, which is kind of, that's an unusual day, right, for builds, Wednesday?
No,
they always seem to come out right before the show, actually.
All right, whatever, you guys. You know what?
Come on, man.
Don't mean to contradict you, Paul.
No,
come on, man.
I'm 1 inch away from dementia. It's fine. So in last week's build, there were two major positive signs that are just wonderful hints for the future. And they address two things that we have been complaining about for a long, long time. The first one is that Windows 10 home users have no normal facility for delaying software updates of any kind. There are workarounds. You can set your computer to be a metered connection or whatever and hope nothing bad happens that you need a real update for. But there's no way in the software to say, I don't want feature updates for X number of days. I don't want these updates for X number of days like you can in Windows 10 Pro. But in the last build, actually, I'm not sure when this appeared. I installed.
I found out.
Yeah.
This is crazy. Okay. Wait till you hear this. You know when this appeared? You want to hear?
Yeah, go ahead. Yes.
This appeared back in November. And well, none of us really noticed it, I guess.
Well, not exactly. So here's why, though. They never said Windows 10 Home. So when I went to go install Windows, the Windows 10 Insider Preview on a bunch of computers, because, I've been working on the book and I want to, keep most of my stuff on the old one. I decided it was time. This thing's getting ready. I went back and I looked at every single blog post they had ever written about 19H1. And I did put that in my list of things that they, because it's so innocuous, right? There is a, if you look at Windows 10 today, like the shipping version of Windows 10, and you have Pro, you'll see three major options under Windows Update: change active hours, view update history, and advanced options. In advanced options, there is a setting for pausing updates, and you can set how long you want that pause to be. The only change they've made, according to their announcement, was they've added a fourth option to the top of that list that says pause updates for X days, 7 by default. They made it easier for a normal person to see it and click on it and pause updates. That's all they said. I didn't take it to be a change of any meaningful nature until I saw it in Windows 10 Home. So not only did they add it to the top level of Windows updates, but they added it to Windows 10 Home.
Yeah.
That's big news.
Okay. Now, can I ask you something about this, though?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it is big news because they've been adamant in not letting home users pause it. But does 7 days do that much for you?
No. So so both of these problems haven't
happened. Not to be a Debbie Downer, but.
No, you're right. You're right. If a new Windows 10 feature update comes out, my advice to people, if they could, would be to pause that thing for 45 days, over a month.
Right. What?
You want to have time to make sure there aren't screwy problems. Because
even a week, but a week would be good. I mean, not wouldn't really people know? Right,
well, no, now. Not at all. I mean, imagine. Remember what happened? Well, Windows. Okay, so Windows 10.
We knew within a week when 1809 was deleted.
You think they'll be able to fix all the problems in a major feature update in a week?
Well, they wouldn't be able to fix them, but I guess you're right. You need to be able to pause it for
7 days.
Here's the problem. Your computer is going to get that feature update on some schedule. You have no insight into when that's going to happen. Right. You don't know if you're part of the first wave, something that's going to happen in 3 weeks or whatever it is. So if you just heard that a new feature update has come out, you're like, oh God, I don't want this. Pause it for 7 days. Well, surprise, behind the scenes, that computer was never going to get it in the next week. It's going to get it 13 days from now. You didn't pause anything. See, that's the problem with this. This will pause cumulative updates, which are mostly what Microsoft calls quality updates, mostly made up of security updates, which actually you want. My point is, yes, it's a step in the right direction. I wish the range, because you can actually set it from 1 to 7 days. I think the reason they put this here, because they're oblivious to this complaint we just made, has to do more with, I'm working on a really important project, and I just want to make sure that my computer doesn't reboot while because I'm leaving all these documents open. And that's not the well, it is a problem, but it's not the problem. So I like that it's there. I see it in Windows 10 Home on multiple computers. They could wipe it out. It may not be in the final version. I don't know. But step in the right direction, not the full solution to the problem. But remember, to this day, there is no official control in Windows 10 to pause updates in Windows 10 Home at all. So it's still an improvement, albeit a minor one. So the second one is my personal pet peeve these days in Windows 10.
I was so happy to see this. Oh, my God.
The Cortana screeching and scatting.
I freaking hate that.
It's unbelievable. I can't tell you how many times.
This is when you're installing Windows the first time, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So or you could reset it, like reset this PC because it's a fresh install. So the computer's over there doing its thing. I'm playing a video game maybe or working on a different computer. And all of a sudden, hey, blah, 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 and it's like the loudest, most obnoxious terribleness. And I jump out of my skin every single time. It's done in the name of accessibility. That's a crock, by the way. I've already written about this extensively. I don't want to go into that too much. But accessibility at any cost is just a brain dead mentality. And they need to get over this. But okay, whatever.
So
I don't mind it being an option.
The way
what I mind is that it happens at full volume without any opportunity to stop it.
The way it also, happens by the way, on Apple is it times out. If you don't do anything after a while, it will then do it. Would that be okay?
Yep. That's the solution I provided to Microsoft. That's how they should handle it. That's exactly what I've said. It's also nonsensical, because the problem is I run into it a lot. Most people will run into it once. So it just scares the crap out of them. The problem is, so you look at the computer now, and you're like, how do I turn this off? And at the bottom of the screen, there's a speaker icon. And you're like, oh, good. You click that, it doesn't turn it off. You have to click a microphone icon. It's nonsense. Like, it's nonsense. Anyway, so this is another one with a caveat. They are going to turn it off. Not for the reason I decided. Not even close. And not for Windows 10 Home users.
Oh, what?
Here's what they're doing.
Windows 10 Home users are the guinea pigs. That's how they see us.
You know what? That's a really friendly way of saying what's really happening, right? Because you're just getting screwed. Like, by virtue of the fact that you bought a computer, no one even thinks about this stuff. Microsoft has arbitrarily divided the world into Windows 10 Home and Pro. The PC maker will choose the appropriate operating system, usually based on cost. They'll choose Home, unless it's a business class PC. And then you just get screwed as the user. You can't pause updates and you can't shut this woman up. Like, it's this digital assistant. It's unbelievable. Like, it's terrible. And so here's why they're doing it. It's unbelievable. It's funny in a way. But now imagine my problem is me, although I've done it with multiple PCs too. Let's say you're in IT. And you're provisioning a ton of Windows 10 computers. all at once. And all of a sudden, this voice starts kicking in all over the room. There are great videos of this online, by the way. It's hilarious. They've addressed, that's the feedback they're addressing. And that's why it's only getting turned off in the business versions of Windows 10, Pro, Enterprise, and I think Education. Step in the right direction. You know, absolutely. Yeah. Geez, do I they just are not listening on this one. Probably because they're deaf, because Cortana
is yelling.
when they first added that, I was like, you know what they're doing? They're looking for reasons to prove Cortana has a reason to be around, right? Sure. Sure. And so they're like, hey, where can we integrate Cortana throughout the operating system and in apps and everything? And now it's just kind of like, okay, they're separating search and Cortana. So this to me feels like, shouldn't you just make,
you know,
the more Cortana voice stuff like an opt-in instead of an opt-out?
There's this belief, though, that anything you add that's accessible is a win. It's just a win. There's no... And they've told me explicitly, like, we've heard from people who love this feature. And I'm like, I'm sure you have. I understand that the 99.99 whatever percent of other people hate it and that it's insane. The way you've implemented it is wrong. And I, you know, no offense to people who can't see or see poorly and maybe want to set up Windows 10 on their own. But if your vision is that bad, the act of setting up Windows 10 is not a priority.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... It's something that is going to happen once, and you probably have someone else who can help you with that.
Well,
I don't know if I
disagree with that. But the point is,
don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it shouldn't be there.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be the default.
Yeah,
it's just
you do it though? Let's say you've got a blind user setting up Windows. They can't see the screen. It's too early for their screen reader to be on there.
They can't tell if it's ready for them or not. You should do what Apple does.
You should wait.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. That's all.
Yeah, and then start speaking. And by the way, when you do start speaking, don't scream. Don't come out at 87% volume or whatever it is.
What if you played a little a jig at a low volume jig? And then people can get used to the idea that you're going to say something.
The world's getting more accessible. So... At some point, maybe there will be a standard for this kind of thing. Yeah. There will be a little sound like that. There will be a prompt for people with vision impairment.
Yeah. I'm sure everybody knows, but if not, Paul is absolutely religious about accessibility. This is not you saying, "Oh, I don't want
my
accessibility."
My son is deaf.
Yeah.
I am.
This is not. I am not
part of this community. Yeah. What I'm telling Microsoft is, you are not doing this right. And this little jig jag thing that she does, her little scatting thing, is disrespectful to the very people you're trying to help.
Not to mention annoying.
A little bit of Wi-Fi here, a little bit of... What are you kidding me?
So annoying.
I don't understand how any human being came up with this. It's crazy. But anyway, sorry. I know I can go on and on about this stuff. But
can I suggest, though, if they do a little jig or a little jingle, they use the one from the French train stations? Because I just...
Yes.
I just love
the SNCF sound or whatever.
The SNCF in the train stations.
I hang out in train stations just to listen to that sound, Leo. That sound on my computer.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Wow, I'm impressed.
I love that song.
Isn't it cool?
I love that song.
And then some obviously gorgeous French woman comes on and says,
yep. So by the way, so now that you're into this, I will mention one of the things I've always noted, like, if you ever take a train in like Boston or New York and the guy will come over the garbled ancient and this beautiful sounding voice, this woman's voice comes off and says in French, you know, next stop, Café de Louvre. You know, it's like, or whatever it is. And you're like, oh. You know, it's just, it's awesome. You know?
So good.
Yeah. So, Microsoft,
only the French.
Boston T, and Apple is the Paris Metro.
Yeah. There you go. In a nutshell.
Yep. Yeah.
Just a little, you know, a little something. You could start low, ramp it up. I'm going to make noise now.
Noise. By the way, people who have vision problems are hypersensitive to sound.
Yes.
The loudness of this thing must be even worse for them.
Yes.
I hear normally and it drives me crazy. Yes. It's disrespectful. That's Period. Yes. There's no way to argue otherwise.
It feels like, and maybe this isn't the case, but it feels like an ad, frankly. It feels right. like they're putting an ad. It's like how TV ads are louder and they're just
extra
annoying.
Loud.
Yeah. Yep. It just feels like they're sticking an ad in at the beginning. I know it's not exactly an ad, but it kind of is. Like, kind of is an ad for how jolly Windows is.
Like, let's find the guy that made that dancing schoolgirl commercial and see what he thinks we should do for accessibility. Like, that's stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't ever stop complaining about this. They literally, it's just a blank. They're like nothing. But it's accessible. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Be happy. They listened.
No,
they listened to the IT pro complaint. Guys were posting videos on YouTube of
There's
this Cortana
thing. Listening to an IT pro. Imagine if
you're installing 30 copies of Windows on 30 machines. Right. They all wake up and they all start at different times saying.
They're all off from each other. Yeah, exactly.
Might as well do jazz hands. Hey, Windows.
You have to yell at them.
Okay. There are. You talked about the builds?
No.
All right. So there's two new builds.
Leave that one to Mary Jo so my blood pressure can go down.
Paul's. I know. He needs to calm down, right?
Yes.
So the features Paul just talked about, the silencing of Cortana in the Enterprise Editions and seeing more clearly that Windows Update is part of Windows 10 Home, that was in a build. Was that the one that came out right at the start of January, I think? Yeah, it is. That was the first build of January, 18309. So that build came out right when everyone came back from Christmas. That build also included some new things around passwordless account sign-in that Microsoft had foreshadowed earlier in a previous build. So that's in there as well. And then today we got 18312. 18312's main noticeable new feature is going to be reserved storage, which I think it's funny. Paul put in the show notes, non-controversy of the week, reserve storage. Based on my Twitter feed, this seems to have become a very controversial feature. So it's a well-intentioned feature. Reserve storage is Microsoft saying they're going to reserve about 7 gigs of disk space, but possibly more, so that in the future, Windows 10 feature updates can be installed smoothly. Because some people know who have storage-constrained devices, sometimes you start to download one of these feature updates and it can't fit on your machine and it's havoc. So their way of solving this is they're going to retain some space that will be held as reserve storage so that you can more easily download these feature updates.
Can I ask you a question? I don't know if you know this. Sure. I didn't look at this too closely yet. But one of the issues you can have in Windows 10 is you download an update and it downloads, it says preparing to install, it says installing, and then it says restart. And then it goes to that, you get the blue screen with the little thing and it's doing whatever it does. If that doesn't work for some reason, like that actually just happened to me on this very computer, and you have to go back and reinstall it and try again, you actually have to re-download the whole update again. It doesn't retain it. Yeah. And I've always kind of wondered about that, because why wouldn't it just be sitting
somewhere
on your computer? But what it does is it says we're going to put your computer back the way it was.
Yeah.
And part of that involves getting rid of the update you just downloaded.
So you're wondering, will reserve storage fix that?
I mean, I'd like it to stay there. Why wouldn't it just stay there?
I'm not sure if it will. But what they've said is this will definitely be something for 19H1. They're not even saying this might be it or might not. It will be. They're saying reserve storage will be introduced automatically on PCs that come with 19H1 pre-installed or on PCs where 19H1 is clean installed. So that's when it's going to start rolling out. So if you got today's build, the 18312, the way you can test this feature is first you have to do a quest through the Windows Insider program. So once you perform this quest, then you'll be able to test this feature and there's a link in their blog post to what the Quest is.
Wait, what do you mean Quest? Like go save Zelda? What?
Yeah, like save Zelda and then you can test reserve store it.
I was wondering if that word was going to go unchallenged.
No, so, you know, in the Insider program, they have these things they call Quests. And basically, it's a sequence of things they want you to do to help them test something specifically. That's what it is.
Okay.
So if you want to test reserve storage, don't download the build first. Do the Quest first, then download the build. Or if you don't accidentally and you download the build first, you're going to have to wait till the next build to test reserve storage.
Now, if I'm a seeker, should I not do a Quest if I'm a seeker?
By nature, if you are a seeker, you are on a Quest.
That is the Quest.
You're on a permanent Quest, then, aren't you? A vision Quest, maybe?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They're trying to make it fun. I understand.
Sorry, I threw the word Quest in
there. No, yeah, I feel like the inmates have taken over the asylum.
Yeah, gamification of everything. Either a Quest. There's also in this build that came out today some new things around the Windows subsystem for Linux command line. They've added some more manageability features to that. So if you're somebody like Leo who cares about that, you might want to also check out today's build. And they're letting you, they're making reset your PC options clearer across devices, they say, through some UI tweaks in today's build as well. So that's 18.3.1.2.
I haven't tested this because you have to do a clean install to see it. But the passwordless sign-in is really interesting because it's possible now, apparently, to create a Microsoft account that only has a telephone number.
Right.
Or you could have a phone number associated with it. And then you can go into a new Windows 10 install and just say, here's my phone number. And then it interacts with your phone in some way. And you say yes, or you type in a code or whatever.
Like,
and then
that,
you're in.
Actually, that's not bad.
It's really smart because, you know, when Microsoft first started talking about getting rid of passwords a year or two ago, I was thinking to myself, like, well, we're never really...
How are you going
to
do that?
Never really going to be done, right? Like, right. Yeah. You know, if you're on like an Apple device and you can usually use Touch ID or whatever, and then every once in a while it will say, this time you got to use your password. Or manually reboot your phone and it says, okay, but this time you have to use your password. Yep. I always think of stuff like that. I think, how are they going to overcome that basic... you know, issue, right? So it's interesting to see them.
Should one use a phone number now? Does that mean I create a new Microsoft account?
You should be able to associate it.
I have my number associated with my Microsoft account. So it would
this really secure, though, using your phone number this way?
SMS is not super secure.
Right?
It's secure-ish. Probably secure enough in most cases. Because, you know, somebody'd have to target you and hijack your SIM and all that. But it happens.
All right. So as a consumer, is anything you do really all that secure? Probably not. I think what this is really for is for businesses, because they will have management on the phone to ensure that you have a secure PIN or password or whatever it is to get into the phone first. And then you'll be able to provide the what is essentially a second factor or whatever, because you're in. It knows it's you. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's what this is really for.
Yeah.
Now, as consumers, we will do dumb things to make life easier, and we can probably circumvent some of the security of this. But I don't know. It's like using a PIN on a Windows laptop, right? Is a PIN really more secure as secure as a password?
No.
Probably not, but I don't care.
Secure enough.
Yeah. Right. It's secure adjacent.
Yeah.
it's you know, I would much rather see someone have a that you have to with the Microsoft account, obviously. So if you have whatever your Microsoft account password is, you don't want to type that in every time you sign in. So the PIN is nice. And then, of course, if you have a fingerprint or face or, I almost called a face ID, Windows Hello facial recognition, you know, that's great too, as far as being convenient.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's all to say about those builds. You know, they're getting close to finalizing this 19H1 because they're doing a bug bash at the end of this month. And we think this will be called 19.03 when it comes out, which means it'll RTM, in quotes, in March and start rolling out in April. So they're getting close to this being finished.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I decided to finally jump on board. because I got to start looking. You know, I can't just ignore, the next version of Windows, obviously. So I've been looking at it. But, you know, that password list thing we were just talking about, that's actually really interesting to me. So I'm curious to see how that changes the sign-in experience, if you can make it work. So I will test that.
Right now, if you have the Authenticator app on your phone and you set up a new Windows and you put your Windows account email, it'll do that. And I love that. And that's actually more secure than SMS. My knowledge, that's secure.
Well, if you don't have a password in your phone, though.
That's right. And somebody has your phone.
But that's what I mean by, as consumers, we will sometimes make dumb decisions that kind of chip away at the security. But I really think that this stuff, look, all you can do is control what you can control. And so for businesses, they're going to want to have whatever the management service is interacting with the phone to ensure that you have a secure PIN, that it changes over a period of time, that, they'll ensure that it's you. And so this is a nice, this makes it much easier on people, which is the goal. But you want to, but also, maintaining security, at least in a managed environment.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yep. Do you want to talk about Windows 10 on ARM?
Oh, God, not really.
Me neither. Okay. So, it says this really matters. Somebody put that in here,
Paul. Quick, I don't want to go off on another extended rant. Or do I?
No, I don't. No, but, where's the gong? Hold on.
Get the gong. No,
there is an interesting question in our world, right? We talk about Intel moving to Ice Lake and 10 nanometer, smaller devices, fanless devices, more powerful devices, better battery life. What's the point of Windows 10 on ARM? And it's a good question. I think there's a reason. Well, I know there's a reason. I mean, Microsoft doesn't want Intel to have a monopoly on this stuff. So Windows 10 or Qualcomm or Windows 10 on ARM helps to push Intel to make the right decisions for their own chipset designs. And I think we're finally seeing that happening in Ice Lake. So I've always said, if this thing fails, and what it did was at least inspire Intel to get better about connectivity, about portability, about battery life, it's still a win for everyone, right? Like, to the average consumer, who cares what the architecture is, as long as everything runs, the performance is great, battery life is great, connectivity is great. So, we'll see. I think it's kind of hanging in the balance here for them. Right now, the Snapdragon 850 is kind of what I would call a minimally acceptable kind of, good enough computing experience. If you can overlook some of the compatibility problems, I think the next gen where they're promising Core i5 type performance is going to close the loop, at least on that part of it. And then the compatibility is an ongoing concern. But, Intel, for the most part, has really been shooting for lucrative but niche markets, right? Premium computers, gaming computers, they're really amping up the power. Whereas I think most people, Mary Jo and myself included, would be better served by something that ran fine, but got awesome battery life, had instant on connectivity, seamless switching between cellular and Wi-Fi networks as required. I think that stuff's a much bigger deal for most normal people. And we'll see, which one gets there. So, I think Windows 10 on ARM is important because it's helping nudge Intel in that direction. I hope it survives. I mean, I think it's a neat idea. A year from now, we'll see what's going on.
It's kind of funny because Intel did radios for Apple, and they were so slow compared to the Qualcomm radios that Apple slowed down the iPhone.
So there was a consistent experience. That's right.
Yeah. And so Intel's reputation, I guess, in this sphere isn't great.
Well, and then you look at even just the PC space. If you look at their low-end processors, the Pentium Gold and Silver processors, the Y-series stuff. Although, again, right now, the very latest version, Ice Lake is where this stuff is going to go over the top, right? We've talked about Surface Go a lot, for example, and this notion that, clearly they were looking at Snapdragon for this. The compatibility problems were probably the reason they didn't do it, performance too. What would it look like with a next-gen Qualcomm chip? It's a good question, but, it's probably even more likely it's going to be a next-gen Intel chip of some kind, right? We just talked about the Intel, Athena initiative for 5G connectivity. That device suddenly becomes really interesting, right? Because the problems with the Surface Go are performance and battery life and size. And size, whatever, they're probably not going to change the size, but these new chips are going to solve those problems. And, you know, that the Surface Go 2, if it's based on, you know, an Ice Lake chip, for example, either late this year or early next year, it's going to be a different, it's a different ballgame, you know. So we'll have a different conversation around that.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing about Athena is, from what I've read about it, is even though it does target Ice Lake, it also does target low power processors as well. So maybe they won't switch the processor family, but there'll be other things right. going on, you know.
But it will still be more efficient, right? It will still be more powerful.
Right.
Yeah.
Better battery life instant on.
I didn't look at, I'm not screwing up your any. Yeah. So this Athena thing, Mary Jo will remember, was a code name in the Microsoft space.
Right.
Back in the day. So back when Longhorn was still a thing and WinHack was still a thing in its original form, every year there would be these prototype computers that Microsoft would work on with a PC maker. And one year it was one called Athena, and it was made with HP. And it was it wasn't meant to be a shipping device, but it was meant to show PC makers how you could take advantage of some of the technologies that were never going to come in Longhorn. So that was really exciting for everybody.
Proof of concept kind of thing.
Right? Yeah. I think it was Athena.
Yeah, I think it was Athena too. Something was codenamed Athena before. I was thinking that when I heard that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yep.
Also, okay, off the top of my head, this might be wrong, but wasn't Outlook, the original version of Mail and News that was in Windows 90-something, wasn't that Athena too? Does that sound right?
She's the goddess of wisdom, so maybe.
There were two separate apps. It was one for news groups and one for mail. And then they merged it into one thing called Mail and News. And it eventually became part of Windows Live Essentials, whatever that thing was called, Windows Live Mail over time. But a long time before that, back when it was still like standalone stuff you had to download, I think Windows 95 or 98, I think the code name for that was also Athena.
Trying to find it.
It was called Internet Mail and News. Because obviously those two things are related.
Codename Athena, referencing Outlook Express.
Outlook Express. That's the thing I'm talking about. Yeah, that was Internet Mail and News became Outlook Express. Yeah.
Okay, so you are correct.
Yep. Ding, ding, ding.
Very good.
Also, wasn't it the name of a goddess of some kind?
I believe it was the Starship Athena in Star Trek Reboot.
What was the Roman version of Athena? Didn't the Romans rip off every Greek god, basically?
No, I think Athena is the Roman version.
Oh, so what was the original
Greek version?
I want to say Hera, but I can't remember. No, what is
it? Hera was Zeus's wife, right?
Well, that doesn't mean she ain't Athena.
No, it does, because Athena is Zeus's daughter.
Minerva?
Minerva,
Athena
that
is the Greek goddess of wisdom.
Oh, you're right. Athena is Greek. Roman is Minerva.
Minerva. That sounds right.
They were syncretized.
Syncretized?
Yeah, well, that's my favorite word.
Please explain.
a good example, the prime example, the place probably I learned the word is the Hagia Sophia in Istanbul, which was a Christian church and then became a mosque. It's the merging of two religions.
So it's like every religious building in Jerusalem is like that.
Yeah, but actually, syncretized more means one is absorbed into another than one is replaced by another. So maybe even the Hagia Sophia isn't quite right. But there's a lot.
The Romans just adopted the whole Greek thing.
That's right. Yeah, and some say that in a way
they were the Microsoft of the ancient world. You know,
embrace, engulf, and devour. That's what it means. I should have just said that. Oh, you know, syncretization. It's engulf and devour.
Oh yeah, that thing.
Yeah.
These days, that's an antitrust problem.
Yeah, they didn't have that in those days. All right, so nice. Next non-controversy of the week.
Yeah, we already did that one.
Okay. That's it? We're done with non-controversies?
Let me say something about Citrix.
Okay,
Let me say something about Citrix.
Yes.
So this week, there was a conference for Citrix resellers called the Citrix Summit, and it was funny because there were no Microsoft press releases coming out of this, though they talked, Microsoft execs there actually talked about Windows Virtual Desktop. If you've been following along with that, Microsoft announced that product at Ignite. It's the service they've got that's going to virtualize Windows 7, 10, Office 365 Pro Plus apps and other third-party apps by running them in Azure using a virtual machine. So it sounds pretty cool. I forgot, but the public preview of that was supposed to be out calendar 2018 before the end of it. It's still nowhere in sight. And at the summit, Microsoft execs told attendees that the virtual Microsoft Windows virtual desktop will be out in Q1 of this year in public preview. They told them a few other things about how Citrix is going to fit in here. They said, you know, even though many people think because we're doing this service, it means we're cutting out partners like Citrix, we're not. And we're actually doing a partnership with Citrix to make them integrate very tightly with what we're doing with Windows virtual desktop going forward. They didn't give any more public details, but I think they gave some NDA details that I don't know, but I'm working to try to find
it. You and I, at different times, have both expressed this belief that someone at Citrix has something on Microsoft. Because
I know.
the fact that Microsoft has not wiped out this company like 20 years ago makes no sense.
And in fact, no sense. Microsoft co-sells Citrix products, and they have made them part of the way that they recommend many enterprises do virtualization. There's something definitely interesting and weird going on there. Remember, there was a whole Microsoft virtualization product that they folded so that Citrix could start selling Zen Desktop and a couple other products in its place.
Was it Terminals? Something related to Terminal Services. It was like a...
Yeah. I don't know if Maharo was the code name of that.
Yeah, it wouldn't make sense. This is because of it. But Citrix, remember Ed Iacobucci, who was at IBM and founded Citrix, was part of the IBM team that went to Microsoft, went to Redmond to do NT. Remember, they swapped and NT engineers went to IBM.
Oh, yeah. From OS2 too? Days.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Ed was part of that and then went on to found Citrix. And I'd always thought, and I knew Ed, he's passed away since, but he was a great guy, really great guy. I always thought that because of that, Ed knew more about the internals of NT than many people.
Well, he might have had was internal messaging about how Microsoft screwed over IBM for NT. And then maybe that explains
maybe Citrix's documents. Game, you
know, maybe they get the all access pass here for some reason. It really doesn't make a ton of sense.
He does. I mean, they certainly knew what they were doing, I guess, but... That was years ago. That was decades ago. So I don't know. Yeah.
But there's still a really tight relationship between those two companies. So tight that Gabriela Schuster, who's the head of Microsoft Partner Initiatives, went and spoke at this summit.
Yeah. Do you think Microsoft has a stake in Citrix?
For example, one solution to this problem would be Microsoft could have bought Citrix at any time.
Right.
And just kind of integrated that. And it would have been a term that just kind of disappeared, but its technology would still kind of just be in there. They never did that either, you know? I believe this relationship to be completely unique in the history of Microsoft. I don't have any other thing I can point to that's like this.
I do think they incorporated, RDP was Citrix or something like that at some point, right?
Yeah, so
I don't know.
You know, but come on. You're telling me.
I'm curious they never bought them.
That's sentimental more than anything else. Yeah, why didn't they just buy them?
A lot of people are like, why didn't they buy Citrix? You know?
Yeah, just buy them. Just put them out of their misery. It's crazy. They're an ongoing concern.
Well, Citrix is not miserable.
No, I don't mean like
that. Microsoft, Citrix is happy.
Of course they are. But they're like the little fish on the shark, you know? Like, you don't... Right. The shark doesn't really need them. And it's just... the thing they do is a feature of this bigger thing that Microsoft does. You know, it's something that could be part of the whole feature set.
You're saying they're a barnacle. Is that what you're saying?
No, those little fish, you know, that kind of, they wait for stuff to follow the sharks, Mark, so they can eat it.
A lamprey eel or something? No, what is that? So
they kind of suction onto the side of the shark.
Yeah.
And when the shark feeds, they
eat. Classic symbiotic relationship.
Symbiotic relationship, yeah, definitely.
Wow, that really shut it down.
Yeah, it did.
I thought the Minerva thing was going to kill this.
It's a remora eel, not a lamprey. Remora eel. GitHub is I thought this was really exciting. And it was clearly a Microsoft move now that they've acquired GitHub. Yep. They've decided to give unlimited. It used to be what you had three repositories for free. I can't remember. There were all these limits on what you could do for free.
Yeah.
They've expanded what you can do for free, which I think is great.
They have. I know. This was really interesting. So they say, Microsoft execs say, one of the most requested features was to take their free plan for GitHub and to make it so that people who were using the free plan could have private repositories for free. That was what they had before. It was like, if you need private repositories.
Oh, you have to pay for those?
You have to pay. Right.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And everybody was like, wait, like, okay, so what about Bitbucket? What about GitLab? Right. You know, why should I stay with GitHub? So right at the start of this year, Microsoft has taken one of the most requested asks and said, we're going to make it free. So, and I've had people say to me, what if you're a commercial developer, though? Can you still do this? Yes, you can. If you have three contributors or fewer on a project and you want to have a private repository, even if it's going to be a commercial product, it's free.
That's pretty awesome.
But Mary Jo, there must be a catch.
Everyone's
is there
saying,
a GitHub 365
catch?
Coming that we need to know about?
Exactly. Exactly. No, you know, and they do have paid programs. And with the paid programs, you get a lot more functionality. And there are a lot of people who are willing to pay for that for GitHub. They actually did somewhat simplify the paid plans as part of this announcement, too. But the main thing is now if you have a small development shop or a team and you want to use the free version of GitHub to have a private repository on GitHub, it's free.
You know who this is good for, believe it or not, is you, authors. If you're collaborating on a book, GitHub is actually a great place to do that.
Leo, let me let you in on a little secret.
Uh-huh.
The Windows 10 field guide is on GitHub.
There you go.
Oh, it is? Wow.
And of course you want to keep it private, at least until you publish it.
I use command line tools to publish the book to LeanPub so they can put it out to the world. Oh.
And if you were working with Brad or somebody else on it, they could have up to three people. That's a pretty good complement of people.
Yeah.
So you pay for that.
Do you use the private repository thing or no?
somebody pays for it.
Yeah. That's a good question. Probably. I don't know.
No, GitHub is a great way to do stuff like that. It's not just code.
Yeah.
It's for collaborating on documents. And you can revert changes.
I don't really mention this. I just wrote this thing about, you know, here's all the stuff I install when I do a new Windows 10 computer. But actually, one of those things is GitHub.
Do you use the, as I do on Windows probably, there's a Windows version of Git that gives you kind
yeah,
of
it's,
command line utility. You don't do the LSW version of Git, probably.
Yeah, so when you install it, you actually can choose whether you want to use Unix style or Windows. Yeah,
yes.
So I do. Yeah, it's all Windows. It's into my, you know, it's in my path. So
yeah, it's Git for Windows. That's what I use.
But if you're in a repository, which in my case is the folder where the document files are, you can run Git commands against it, you know, and publish to a destination, which in my case is LeanPub. And I guess I could have automated it slightly differently with some kind of a
no, but
script
you get
or something.
You get used to, you know, git commit message, da da da, mm-hmm. git push. You get used to that. It's very quick. It's very easy. I think it's a good way to do it. I actually use a private Git repository, not through GitHub, but through another service called Keybase for taxes, for coding, but also PGP keys. You know, stuff I want to keep secure and private. It's really great. And Git is a great way to do it. Then every computer has it.
Yep.
Yeah.
It just, lets me work on the book offline. Then I can add all the stuff that changed. Yep. I can commit it, and then I can push it.
And if you were working with another author, it would even be better because, you know.
Well, I do work with two people in this, so. I'm usually the only one in there, but we do have two other people.
Oh, it's like middle school science projects. You're doing all the work.
No, they do a different work. Actually, I mean, Raphael does a lot of work on the technical side, and Martin does all the graphical
stuff. Yes, it's perfect.
Yeah.
So thank you, GitHub. Do you think I think there was such a push against them when Microsoft bought them from the open source community. I think that's gone now, though, don't you?
I hope so. You have to have not been paying attention to what Microsoft has done over the past couple of years to feel any animosity to them at this point.
There was just so much bad history, though. I think It's largely gone, but not totally gone. Like when I wrote about this GitHub thing, there were people who said, yeah, but still, you know, they're going to be looking at what you put in there.
But acting like it's this amorphous they that is somehow this entity that has existed through time and space. You know, I always use this example because it's kind of extreme, but it's like, I still don't like Germany because of the whole World War II thing. It's like, guys, those people are different. They're not the same.
Right.
You know, the Microsoft of today is not the Microsoft of the Halloween papers or whatever time frame you want to go back to. The Linux is a cancer days or whatever.
Cathedral and the bazaar.
the bazaar. Yeah. You know, those days are over. You should love that. And, you know, because Windows 1, 2. No. No, but, I mean, you know, we have to... You know, it's like the Apple was the Steve Jobs. You know, we have to get over the notion that for Apple to win, Microsoft has to lose, right? Another outdated notion. You know, same thing for the Microsoft side. You know, we have to get over the notion that for Microsoft to win, that open source has to lose.
Yeah.
And vice versa. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Microsoft should make Surface branded wireless earbuds, says Mary Jo Foley. And maybe they are. What do you know that we don't know?
Yes, Mary Jo, please.
I'm curious what I know.
she doesn't know what she knows. It's a Rumsfeld.
All I know is I've heard a rumor from a guy named Paul Theriot that there might be some Surface branded.
Yeah. So,
earbuds?
What does Theriot know?
At the fall, I guess it was October event where they announced all the new Surface hardware. The only actual new device they announced was these Surface headphones, right? Which are these kind of enormous over-the-ear Bose-style noise-canceling headphones, right? And they're nice, but listening, I've been trying to go back and find a recording of how he described them because Microsoft has only released little pieces of that event, and this is not one of them, at least not that I could find. But I believe, as I recall, the way he said it was, you know, a lot of modern offices, the office walls have come down, people work in different spaces, and, you know, people be on the phone or talking to other people, and you want to kind of shut them out. And so you kind of put on these giant can things, and that's how you do it. That's why we built them. And I was like, eh. You know, like some people might want to do that. But it seems like, you know, those kind of in-the-air things, noise canceling, like Bose actually makes those as well, might be a better choice for a lot of people. And that these – when I look at these headphones, I look at them and I think, like, these would be really good gaming headphones, right? I'm actually surprised they don't make an Xbox branded version of these things, you know?
So anyway, would you need a special microphone for it to be a gaming headset, or could you use some embedded microphones that are in the headsets?
Yeah. That's a good question. I assume. Should I assume? I don't know how that would work, actually. Right now, I've only used wired headphones with an Xbox through the controller, but it's one of those kind of small headphone cables. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if this has a headphone cable. It probably doesn't, but they could certainly make a version of it that would connect to the controller. You could make a new version of the controller if it already doesn't support that, that does Bluetooth for audio. It does already have Bluetooth. Maybe it already does. I don't know. Obviously, this does have a built-in microphone. Actually, a microphone array of some kind.
There's like eight of them, right? Or something crazy.
Well, because of directional sound, whatever. But I would much prefer, and I think a lot of people would prefer earbuds. Wireless earbuds and noise canceling and microphone and all that stuff. I just think that would make more sense for Surface. Like I look at these, I think this should be an Xbox thing, not a Surface thing. And, or at least an Xbox thing and a Surface thing. So I published this thing. And then like within a day, I actually heard from someone I trust who said, well, it's interesting that you wrote this because they are in fact working on that. So apparently someday we may in fact get the Surface earbuds of my dreams. Good. And so,
Why wouldn't they work on it? You know, this is a high profit margin area, by the way.
I think
companies make a lot of money on this stuff.
Yeah, like they're expensive. I mean,
And they don't cost much to make.
If this works as a product, if it sells, I expect there to be an explosion of Surface peripherals. I've never quite understood why they haven't done far beyond just the basics. You know, mice and keyboard covers and so forth. I think there's a healthy market for branded things,
like,
you know,
what? Like this what is else? Bowling shirts,
hard drives, dongles, two of you know, like the YubiKey style.
Oh yeah,
security.
That's a hot like all kinds item. Of things. Yeah,
monitors.
Yes, please. Monitors.
Surface Studio monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Please.
Yeah.
You know, I looked at that Lenovo Surface.
Building out the family would be kind of, would be cool.
I looked at that Lenovo Surface Studio clone. It's ugly.
Yeah.
It's not, that's not a.
It definitely doesn't look like the Surface Studio.
It's not elegant.
Right.
It's a shame there was no Xbox news at CES. Or was there?
What's that?
Xbox?
Or was it even a shame?
Okay. All right.
You know, just for that, I kept this down to one Xbox story, but you know what?
The SNCF jingle remix. Passage d'un train. Éloignez-vous de la bordure du quai. DJ White. Attention, passage d'un train. Éloignez-vous de la bordure du quai. You want that, Paul? I can arrange for it.
That could be our new theme song.
It should be our new theme song. I like it.
Yeah.
I don't want to get sued by the French national train system, however.
France, love them. It's funny. My family knows of this particular affliction.
Yeah. Xbox.
No, so Xbox, curiously, not really at CES. But there have been some Xbox-related news items in the past week. The big one is kind of goofy because it's just a look back at 2018 when Microsoft did not dominate the video game industry and cast Sony aside. But, they for gamers and for people who have remained loyal to the Xbox ecosystem, it was really a neat year of expansion. And when you look at things like backward compatible games, Xbox Game Pass, and these things have just exploded, right? And so the numbers on all of these things have just not quite exponentially, but they've just gone up dramatically. And I think this is all just, you know, pointing to this future where, again, Microsoft becomes a cloud service provider for games, and it will work on whatever device, much like Microsoft's applications now work on whatever device, you know, that this is kind of the future, this thing. And there are baby steps to take. You know, you can have cross-play between platforms. You can have games that go to Xbox Game Pass that work on Windows 10 and on Xbox One. But obviously the future is deploying this stuff at scale across different platforms. And I think 2018 was actually kind of a great year for Xbox, based on my many hours playing Call of Duty. But also on the many things that they announced, you know, and the many improvements to all of the services that they offer. So I'm sorry, Mary Jo, but...
That wasn't bad. That was painless.
That was okay. That was doable.
Yeah. I mean, it was better than, I don't know.
Well, there was some other stuff. If I really wanted to, you know, push it.
Turns out there are quite a few SNCF jingle remixes.
Yeah, that makes sense. You couldn't visit a station and not be like, huh, yeah, that's kind of a cool sound. They always do it right before they want to make an announcement, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that sound indicates that you need to listen because some train's coming in or whatever.
This is what you hear.
Yeah. And then the voice comes on and says, you know, the 114 from Lyon is arriving on, you know.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, tracked 14.
Let's take a little break. What do you say? And we will come back.
Let's slow it down a notch.
Let's slow it down. Time for the quiet storm of Paul's tips and picks and Mary Jo's enterprise tip of the week. But first, on a rainy Wednesday afternoon, I want to tell you how you can send your computer to France while you're sitting at home, or England, or Germany, or anywhere you want to go, using, yes, ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is the way to eliminate geographic restrictions, to surf the net safely, securely, and privately. ExpressVPN is the best VPN out there, period. I could say that with confidence, not just because that's what I think, but it's rated the number one VPN service on Tech Radar. And by the way, if you go to ExpressVPN.com/windows, you can get 3 extra months free when you sign up for a year, and a 30-day money back guarantee, less than $7 a month. Whether you're in a cafe or a hotel, wherever you're using Wi-Fi, You got to use VPN to protect yourself, protect your privacy, protect your data. And I know a lot of people use VPNs at home, too, because, you know, the biggest snoop is your ISP. ExpressVPN has easy-to-use apps, not only for Windows and Mac, but they also run on your phone or your tablet. So no matter where you are, you can be secure. They turn on with one click and off with one click. They secure and anonymize the internet by encrypting your data, hiding your public IP address. And, of course, ExpressVPN takes your privacy seriously. That's why they do no logging, and they operate out of a country where no one can get to them or something like that. It is absolutely the way to surf safely on Wi-Fi, to eliminate geographic restrictions, to use the internet as it was intended, privately and freely. Protect your online activity today. Find out how you can get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. ExpressVPN.com/windows. I think sometimes people shop VPN price only. Big mistake. If a VPN is free or inexpensive, it's almost guaranteed that they're collecting your information and using it. Sometimes they even, I've heard of VPNs injecting ads into your traffic. That's not a good deal for you, and it's not a secure solution. ExpressVPN is. ExpressVPN.com/windows. They protect your privacy. They do not log. And even then, it's still very reasonable. Less than $7 a month, plus 3 months free when you sign up for a year. The number one trusted leader in VPN. And by the way, my experience, the fastest, with 148 locations in 94 countries, ExpressVPN.com/windows. Yes, you can be in Paris and never leave home. Paul Thurrott, I think you, my friend, should give us a tip or a trick or something cool.
I would like to be in Paris.
I know. Who wouldn't? Bum, bum,
So you may have seen the news right ahead of CES. Amazon revealed via an interview that there are over 100 million Alexa-powered devices.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Google came back with, well, you have a billion devices. Yeah. This is not as far apart as it sounds, right? First of all, the billion Google devices are mostly phones, which may or may not be actively using Google Assistant.
Right.
Whereas the Alexa devices were specifically purchased by people in the form of a smart speaker, typically, so they could use the service. So I think these things are actually very close, and I think they're going to remain very close. But it's interesting to me when I think about platforms and the history of platforms. You know, you look at the PC, there was one major winner and then this other minor player. You look at smartphones, there's this one major winner and this other minor player. And when you look at digital assistants or ambient computing, whatever you want to call that, it's not really working out that way. There are secondary players like Bixby and Siri that will remain popular just because they're based on smartphone platforms that are used by hundreds of millions of people. And what we've seen so far, and this is very different from, you could go back to the earliest days of Commodore 64 versus Atari or whatever. It was always very difficult to support different platforms, you know, and it's one of the reasons why you don't see multiple platforms of computers or phones or whatever. But in this case, we are seeing that happen. So I think when it comes to smart devices, whatever it is, smart thermostats, smart door locks, smart lights, you know, whatever it might be, car support, et cetera, support for online services, it behooves all of these companies to support all the major players. And so regardless of the actual numbers, I would just say at this point, it's very clear that Google Assistant and Amazon are both top tier choices. They're always going to be supported. And honestly, even if you went with Bixby for some insane reason or with Siri for an even slightly less insane reason, those things are going to be broadly supported as well. There's no doubt about it. So
you didn't mention.
So my final little coda for this story is that there is one loser in this market, unfortunately. And it's Cortana, obviously.
You're not talking Viv here. This is.
No. Yeah. No, even Viv is probably fine. Cortana, I think, has a role to play within the Microsoft ecosystem, whatever that means, right? So if you're majority of your time is spent on Microsoft device, you know, Windows PCs and devices and so forth, Cortana can absolutely, I should say software and services as well. Cortana can play a role there. And actually, for now, it's a fairly unique role, right? Your Google Assistant doesn't have a lot of insight into this world today, you know, and that may change. We've already seen the first steps toward that with integration. I think that continues, expands. I think that's the future. We're going to see a bunch of PCs this year that come with Alexa built right in from the get-go. So I think the die has been set on that one, unfortunately.
Do you have one you prefer, or do you use both Amazon Echo and Google?
No, I use Google Assistant mostly. Yeah. So we have Chromecast all over the house. We have Google Homes all over the house. We have a smart display in the kitchen, and it's pretty much all I use. I do have the little dot, like the previous version of the dot, just for testing purposes. But I really just use the Google stuff. Don't take that the wrong way. Honestly, there are great reasons to go. Are you okay, Mary Jo?
It's me.
No, I agree with you. I think Google's Assistant is easily the best and likely to get better and better.
Yeah, I think so too.
You know, I used for a long time. Oh, I turned her off. I didn't want her to get involved. Go ahead.
What do you think about music, though? Do you stay with Google Music or do you go with Amazon?
So within the Google ecosystem, it actually doesn't matter what service you choose because you can just set whatever default you want. So I actually do happen to use Google Play Music personally, but I use it because I prefer it. The rest of my family uses Spotify. And so
it works
with
Spotify, though, right? I mean,
yeah. So if you go to one of the Google Homes or to the smart display, even my wife, and you say, I want to play whatever playlist, it recognizes her voice and does it over Spotify. Mm. When I come out and I say I want to listen to music, it does it over Google Play Music.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah, and you control that with the app. So,
Yep.
The only thing it doesn't do is iTunes, obviously. Mm. Does it do Amazon or no? I think Amazon Unlimited is really limited to the Echo. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure that's true. But
it may not be true,
If it is true, it won't be true forever. And by the way, for whatever it's worth, not that this is like a big story for our show, but I do think you're going to see iTunes / Apple Music appear everywhere. And actually, I wouldn't
There's
be
evidence
surprised
of that. You know why? At CES, Samsung, of all people.
It's not just Samsung, though. See, it's LG, it's Vizio, it's Sony.
All put iTunes and AirPlay 2 in their TVs. Yeah.
So I actually just wrote about this today. It's not really a Microsoft topic, but this is Apple, the company that hates to partner, understands that its little insular ecosystem is only going to get it so far when it comes to services. Its services business are a tiny percentage of its iPhone revenues. And the only way it can ever hope to compete is you have to have more entry points for it. They want to launch a TV service. It has to be on your TV. It has to be on your Roku. It has to be on your Fire TV. I think those things are all going to happen. They've finally woken up to this. This company hates to partner, but they're forced to.
So Google does not support. Here are the music and audio choices: YouTube Music, obviously; Google Play Music, obviously; Spotify, Pandora, and Deezer.
Yeah. So I bet that changes.
Well, certainly Apple has become more open to the idea of being on other people's platforms.
Is on
that's
Echo
surprising.
Now, is it not?
Yes, which means why would you buy a HomePod, right?
Well, that's a good question in any case. it's just so stupid expensive. But, you know, Google has this thing.
You know, for Henry, for Christmas, I really thought long and hard because he uses Apple Music. But he also, he prefers Spotify, I think. And I got him a Google Home Max because...
Yeah, because it connects to any Chromecast connected speaker.
It sounds
just
great.
Just as well as it...
In fact, some say sounds better than the HomePod. I certainly...
Spotify is fascinating to me because it supports multiple protocols. Everything. So from within the app, you can choose from multiple different kinds of speakers.
Yeah. I like that.
The list of speakers I can connect to from my phone is ludicrous. Yeah. When I go up and shave and clean up and stuff, I'll listen to a podcast or an audiobook and I have to cast it to the speaker in the bathroom. And the thing... populates over time. So oftentimes I'll hit a button and then my wife will be like, you're playing music in the kitchen again. Or, you know, like, is it like I hit the wrong, you know what I mean? Because it gets kind of up.
Can you do multi-speaker, Sonos style multi-speaker audio?
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what we do. So I have wonderful speakers out in the sunroom, in my office, in that room, and in the kitchen. And we have it's a whole house audio thing. So you can choose the speakers. Like, we have groups. So there's a Therat All or whatever. That's all of the speakers.
So you say, okay, Googie, listen to
Christmas carols Christmas on Throughout All.
On Throughout All. The whole house. That's nice.
Yep. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. I have to say, way, I feel a little ripped off. Go ahead. Which I do. I love Chromecast Audio.
Chromecast Audio is $35.
Yeah.
I bought these studio speakers that are $120 on Amazon, and I've got basically two sets that are not exactly the same, but basically the same. I mean, for the price of like a Sonos speaker, right? Like I'm kind of, you know, it's astonishing.
I have an ungodly number of Sonos speakers, and I've at this point, it's really time to retire them. I think I like them, but
well, so here's the good news: Google Assistant is Chromecast is coming to it this year. Google Assistant, and you'll be able to add them into a
Okay, so I mean, they sound fine. There's no reason to replace them, but I can't talk.
They sound great.
Yeah,
you will.
Yeah, you will.
Amazon like added a Chromecast-like devices. I would imagine. Look, Sonos loves to sell these little gadgets that cost hundreds of dollars so you can add something to a thing. I'm sure they're going to have a little bridge that will be like add voice to your existing Sonos 5 or whatever.
Right.
They'll do it.
I use it right now. Yeah. I use Echo. I was in the bathroom shaving, coincidentally.
Yep.
And I will say to my Echo, Echo, play, well, in this case, the daily podcast on bathroom Sonos. And it just plays it on the Sonos. So that's nice. That is nice. Yep. But it's a little bit convoluted.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I'll often just do it on the phone. So if I'm up, like, exact scenario, I'll do it, like I said, I'll do on my phone, I'll just cast from the app. And then the speaker list populates, and I choose the one I want. And then I miss, you know, because it's...
So Sonos has confirmed that the Sonos One, which I have, and the Beam speakers will support Google Assistant.
Yeah, but
year.
If you look at this, they're actually also saying they're going to bring it to older devices.
Ah, that would be nice. That would be nice.
Because the Sonos One is the one that comes with the Amazon Assistant built in and voice control.
Yeah. I have that one in my closet, of all things. I have way too many devices. I have
also way too large of a closet if it needs a
speaker. I have an Echo Spot. Oh, my closet has an Echo Spot and a Sonos One.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of nutty. I don't like to be alone with my shoes. Is that weird?
Or apparently with your thoughts.
Oh, no. Heaven forfend. There's silence anywhere in the room. And you also, Paul, not to give you short shrift, have an app pick of the week.
Yeah. Actually, I have three app picks.
What?
None of these are necessarily major, but we know that Qualcomm was working to bring native browsers to Windows 10 and ARM, which we talked about earlier. And I actually missed this when it happened, but apparently starting in late December, there are nightly Firefox builds for ARM 64 and Windows 10 on ARM. And that means you can get a native web browser finally that's not Microsoft Edge. It's a little rough. It's not the performance. The problem with running emulated 32-bit browsers on Windows 10 on ARM is performance, frankly. And you can do a real unscientific test like I've done just like app startup. And it takes several seconds to start these things up. Firefox today takes several seconds to start up in native form. So it's not anywhere near ready. But if you're one of those hardy people who is using the system, you're still going to want to take a look at it. And you can find that. I wrote an article about it on the site, but it's on their, the Firefox download page where you go to advanced and you choose the different versions. And they have, you know, the ones for really technical people. And it kind of goes down the list. This is the most complicated one of all, but there is an installer. So it's not like you have to do a lot of work, but you just have to find it. And then just two updates to things that have been around for a while. Microsoft Edge on iOS picks up picture-in-picture support. So when you don't want that autoplay video on a website, you can get it when you're not actually in the app now too, which is really useful. And OneDrive for Mac picks up files on demand support, which is that awesome feature we've had in Windows 10 since when? Since 1709 maybe? Or I think it was last year. Or 1803, I don't remember. But files on demand is awesome. And I think I had said of OneDrive some time ago that I really got used to not having what we used to call placeholders. And I arranged my folder structure completely, like rearranged it so that I could just sync the small couple of things I needed down to PCs. And I've been using that for years now. But now with files on demand, I can see my entire OneDrive, everyone can obviously, right in File Explorer. And then you can just kind of mark the folders that you want to be always available offline. And now you can do that on the Mac.
Nice. Well, there you have it, folks.
Mm-hmm. Now, for my flavored vodka pick of the week.
we do need that one. For her cruciferous vegetable pick of the week, here's Mary Jo Foley.
I like that. We should do that.
We should.
My enterprise pick, though, not vegetable pick, is Microsoft Teams. Because today, Teams got some more first-line worker features.
I saw your article. I thought this was really interesting. Wow.
So this is interesting for a couple reasons. One is, when we did our prediction show last week, I said one of my big predictions was Microsoft was going to make a lot of push toward picking up first-line workers with their products. I was right. I was right about something. What? So today's announcement was first-line workers, who are people on the front lines, you know, like people who work in hospitality desks at hotels, hospital workers, manufacturing workers. These people are very mobile. They're always on the go. They're not sitting at a desk like information workers. So they added some new mobile features specifically targeting these first-line workers. One of them is something they're calling smart camera, because they know that a lot of first-line workers, say if you're working in like a Best Buy or something, they go and take a picture of something in an aisle to show their boss. But they're sending these over these insecure channels using whatever happens to be on their phone for their messaging protocol. So Microsoft's idea is, hey, what if we could get it so that if they use their camera on their smartphone, it'll just save to Teams and not save locally to their phone. Then they can even use it for things like X-ray pictures if you're in a hospital and not be worried about compliance violations. So that's one of the features they're going to be adding to first-line worker Teams configurations. They're also doing that for secure messaging. Same idea. Like if you're talking to your boss using your messaging protocol on your phone, it's not secure. How about instead if you saved it to Teams or did it through Teams so that you would have a secure environment that that your bosses wouldn't have to worry about you possibly revealing information that, again, violates privacy or compliance rules. So those are a couple of the mobility things. They also have a feature in Teams that they announced at Ignite called Shifts, which is a feature for your boss to manage shifts of first-line workers and kind of keep track of their schedules. The idea there is Microsoft opens up that API so that if you have an enterprise workforce management product installed, Shifts can now integrate right into that through this new Open Graph API. And because everybody needs a little praise, Microsoft also is adding badges for first-line workers to Teams, trying to increase employee loyalty and make people feel loved in their teams. I said that with a straight face, but yeah, that's a thing. So
we love our team.
We love our team and we love our employees. And we don't want you to quit, even though we're paying you $10 an hour or whatever we're paying you. So, yeah.
Oh, is that what first line means?
First
minimum
line workers,
wage.
There are, you know, people who work
unloved.
Unloved.
Restaurants, yeah, you know, yeah. Fast food restaurants, but also people who work in hospitals, too. I mean, like, it's a wide gamut of what is considered a first line worker.
Yeah.
So all these things are either in Teams as of today or coming in the next calendar quarter. Nice. And will be rolled out.
And it's not a code name. This week, it's a buzzword.
Yeah. And this has been, I think, a buzzword of the week before for me. But I wanted to revisit it because it came up a lot this week with CES. The buzzword is partner. Microsoft no longer uses the word partner just to refer to companies like Citrix and like SAP and like Adobe. They're now using the word partner to talk about customers, too. So I don't know if you guys saw this earlier this week. Microsoft had a partnership announcement with Kroger, the supermarket chain. And when I was reading articles about this all over the web, people were like, oh, this is how Microsoft takes on Amazon and Whole Foods and blah, blah, blah. Guys, you know what that Kroger deal was? It was a customer win for Microsoft. Kroger is paying Microsoft for Azure. They're using Azure. Kroger is using Azure to build their own retail as a service product. This is not Microsoft getting into food distribution, getting into running their own food stores or anything like that. It's not the same thing as Amazon and Whole Foods at all. So because of the word partner, I think a lot of people are getting confused when Microsoft announces these deals. Another one that they announced at CES was around LG Electronics. They announced a self-driving car partnership. So again, people are like, oh, Microsoft's getting into self-driving cars. Nope, they are not. They are selling Azure and some of their AI technologies to LGE, which is using them in self-driving car dashboards and other components. So word to the wise, when you hear partner, it might not be what you think. It might just be a customer win for Microsoft.
But we're all partners in this.
We're all partners. I'm a partner. You're a partner. We're partners.
And you know,
partners in life.
You know what partners do Windows Weekly for other partners?
Hey, partner.
They buy him a beer.
Yep. Paul's going to hate my beer.
Gladly take
pick.
A beer today.
You're going to hate this beer go. Pick. Sorry.
It's got IPA in the name, doesn't it?
It does. But let me set this up
for
you.
Hold on. No.
Oh, wait, I have the perfect setup for this.
Okay.
As Azure Stack users know.
Okay.
Oh, geez.
Stop right now.
Okay.
Hybrid computing
yes.
is a thing.
Yes.
Hybrid computing is a thing.
Yes.
So now our hybrid IPAs, people.
Oh.
Firestone Walker has a beer that they're calling Propagator Generation 1, which is called a hybrid IPA. And the reason it's a hybrid is it takes the best of East Coast IPAs and the best of West Coast IPAs and combines them into one.
It's a hybrid with itself.
It's a hybrid.
I thought it was
going to
be like
IPA.
A hybrid with some other kind of beer.
No, this one is a hybrid IPA. But I was skeptical when I read the description of this. But I have to tell you, it was very delicious when I tried
it. It's more IPA.
It's more IPA.
It's not less IPA.
No, it's way more. It's way more. Because you get all the nice juiciness of the hops from one coast and the bitterness of the hops from the other coast, and you munge them together, and you just get this thing that's very delicious, smooth, 7.5%. So you could have more than one and still be okay. So if you see it around, it's called Firestone Walker Propagator Generation 1, and it's a hybrid IPA.
And our chat room, specifically Webster, wants to wish you happy new beer.
Happy new
beer.
Is that a thing?
Happy
nice.
New beer. No, I think it's a good thing that we should start it. So I didn't realize which coast's hops are bitter and which coast's hops are mellow.
It's so, just like the rapper wars from the 90s.
It sounds like it. Oh, you're Oakland style.
A lot of times West Coast beers, I think, are more bitter. Like, have you ever had an IPA in Seattle? Those are like really like, woof, hardcore hops and bitterness. And New England IPA style is much more juicy.
Okay.
Kind of the opposite of the way you might think.
Yeah,
of the people. Right? Yeah, exactly.
Right. New England
based
is.
Based on my understanding of the cultures.
Usually a little posh. Well, there you go. That's a great Windows Weekly. You just kick off... our second episode of 2019, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. You'll find Mary Jo Foley at her ZDNet blog, allaboutmicrosoft.com. You'll find Paul at his website, Thurrott.com. And Paul's books are at leanpub.com, including the Windows 10 Field Guide. Now out as written on GitHub.
I know. I'm impressed by that and intrigued.
Yeah.
It's my one little... attempt at nerddom, I guess.
That's pretty nerdy. Pretty nerdy. We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. If you want to tune in and watch, the live feed is at twit.tv/live. Actually, there's live audio and video. You have a choice of channels in both, so pick the one that works best for you. If you are watching live on a Wednesday afternoon, you should probably go in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. where the other five people who are watching live are also hanging. Yeah, these are the kids in the back of the class. The commenting at us,
occasional right, spitballing,
occasional spitballs. Yes, no, they're great, and it makes it a lot more fun too. If you can't watch live or listen live, I understand. I mean, obviously, people have lives, but that's why we make everything we do on demand as well. At twit.tv/WW, you can download every episode, audio or video. You can also, and I would encourage you to do this, subscribe at, just do it in your favorite podcast, or you can go to twit.tv/WW for a list. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. We'll see you next week. Where are you? Are you traveling anytime soon? We always ask at the end of the show.
No.
No plans?
Yeah, no, thankfully.
Nope. I know. A little
we
break
have stuff
from travel.
In the spring and summer, but so far, My schedule is clear, which is
Alex
so nice.
Just wiped his brow, Alex.
Yep, I bet.
So it's weird to me that my travel is hard on Alex, but
not as hard as on you. But it's always we always have to work out the technical details. Yeah. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Have a great week. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye bye.